You're listening to the Book Club at 91.7 on WVXU and WMUB. I'm Mark Purcell. Good Saturday morning to you. On the phone with me is Gary Belsky, who, along with his friend Neil Fine, has just released the book On the Origins of Sports, The Early History and Original Rules of Everybody's Favorite Games. Gary Belsky, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm a big Cincinnati fan, even though I'm from St. Louis, so my Cardinals are mortal enemies of your Reds.
That's true. Well, I will say that this book on the origins of sports, I found fascinating. You and Neil have done a great job of looking at 21 of the most popular sports in the world. I wanted to ask, to begin with, how you chose these particular sports to write about, because, of course, there's baseball and basketball and rugby and soccer, but you also have wiffle ball and fantasy football and kickball even. How did you choose the sports to write about in your book?
Well, there are probably three factors. The first factor was we obviously wanted to look at major sports, and it's funny that you mentioned sort of the major sports in the United States, but obviously, if you go globally, some of the bigger sports are cricket and field hockey, believe it or not, which is arguably, based on participation or fandom, one of the top five sports in the world because it's popular in India and Pakistan. And if you're popular in India and Pakistan, you're popular in the world.
Yes, indeed.
So we looked at sort of, you know, we looked at popularity. We also looked a little bit at, you know, it's our book, so we wanted to include a few things that we thought were interesting or cool. Fantasy sports, obviously, there's just, you know, it's not a sport per se, but it's obviously directly connected to sports. Kickball was something from our youth. It's kind of like checkers. It's not very significant on a professional level, but everybody has played it as a child. The same with Ultimate Frisbee, which is, you know, I wouldn't argue is a major sport in the world, but it's pretty significant, and it's the most recent one in the book. But ultimately, the main factor for getting into the book was if we could identify the set of rules that launched the game as we know it. That was sort of the what's unusual about this book. There's obviously been history of sports books before, but we essentially tried to tell the story of every sport and that leading up to the moment where it kind of became some version of the sport that everyone would recognize today. And in order to do that, we had to be able to identify a set of rules that launched the modern version. And so there were a few sports in there that we wanted to include. Surfing, for example, Formula One as another example, you know, open wheel racing, that we didn't include because we actually couldn't find any set of rules that everybody agreed was the launch pad rules. We have NASCAR in there because stock car racing actually started, you know, as we know it, started very definitively in 1947 with the creation of the National Association of Stock Car Auto Racing, and there was a, you know, an original set of rules. So that was basically it. Popular, a little bit of our own particular interest, and could we find a set of rules that everybody agreed was the beginning of the modern version of the game?
Well, you deliver these sports in your book, The Origin of Sports, in alphabetical order, and you start out with baseball. And what sport to start out with? You mentioned the Cardinals and the Reds there, but the murky origins of baseball, you lay out right there in the first chapter, and it's not Abner Doubleday in Cooperstown, New York, necessarily, that you quote as the origin of the sport, but the Knickerbocker Baseball Club in 1845.
Yeah, well, baseball is an interesting, it alphabetically came first, and it's also probably appropriate to come first because it probably has the most misinformation about its origin. And by that, I mean, I'm not sure anybody really thinks about the origins of football, American football, or the origins of soccer too much. But baseball, everybody thinks they know how it was invented, which was that it was, you know, this guy named Abner Doubleday who went on to become a Union general when he was a little kid or a young man. He created this game in Cooperstown, New York, you know, out of whole cloth, drawing a diamond on the street. There's a whole myth surrounding it, and that's what it is, a myth. Baseball was invented in England along with a whole bunch of other ball sports. You know, probably in the 1300s or 1400s, there's references to it in British literature long before America became America. And what happened was, you know, the British colonists brought it over to this country, a whole bunch of different ball sports, rounders. They even played a little bit of cricket, and they played a game that they called baseball. And baseball was the one that caught on here. And what happened was in different parts of the country, people were playing different versions of this game of baseball. That's often what happens. That was often the reason why all these rules were written, was because towns or villages or schools or parishes were playing different versions of a game. And then they started playing each other, and there was a need to kind of standardize what the game was. But in baseball's case, there was a Massachusetts version of the game and a New York version of the game. And the New York version essentially was championed by this Knickerbocker baseball club. And because they were in New York, even back then in the 1840s, that was kind of the dominant city. They essentially said, if you're going to come and play us in our version of baseball, you're going to have to play by our rules. And they wrote them down and would, you know, post them and give them out and publish them in newspapers. And we used that as the foundational rules. Two things that are worth noting. One, Abner Doubleday, just to confirm that that was a myth, he was from Cooperstown, but he's not even enshrined in the Baseball Hall of Fame. So the people who actually pay attention to this know that his role in the sport was probably non-existent, except that, of course, baseball was played by a lot of Union soldiers during the Civil War, and he was a Union general. And the other thing to note was that the 1848 Knickerbocker rules were really, you could look at those rules and say, okay, that's baseball as we know it. About 13 years later, there was another convention to kind of make the rules even more uniform. And there are some people that think that was the first set of rules for baseball as we know it. But we like the Knickerbocker rules because they're somewhat well-known, and they're kind of adorable in the way that they wrote down these rules to explain the game to people who were already playing it, but they wanted to enforce their version of it.
On the Origins of Sports, the Early History and Original Rules of Everybody's Favorite Games, a new book by Gary Belsky and Neil Fine. I'm speaking with Gary here on the Book Club at 91.7. In the book, you see the evolution of sports, and you talk about everyone plays it, and they need to settle on a set of rules that, you know, it finally gets codified, if you may. But I noticed that a lot of these games, a lot of these rules seem to originate there in the Victorian times or start of the early 20th century. Was it that Victorian need for order that was part of the movement for these rules?
Well, I think the Victorian reference is the appropriate. You're obviously referring to, you know, Victorian refers to Queen Victoria, and one of the dirty little secrets, or not dirty exactly, but underappreciated secrets about modern sports as we know it, what I like to call the sports industrial complex, is that a great deal of the modern sports empire owes itself to the British Empire. And what I mean by that is we have 21 sports in the book, and only one of them involved any translation from a set of rules in a foreign language. That was Olympic wrestling, which was really translated from Greek and Roman literature from a couple thousand years ago. Everything else was written in English. And if you think about it, that's curious, because people were playing ball sports, kickball sports, and stick-and-ball sports for a long time everywhere in the world. But the rules that defined almost all of those games were essentially either written down by the British or by their American cousins. And that's because as the British expanded their empire and started to play their version of games in other countries, invariably the local natives would start to adopt their version of hitting a ball or hitting a rock with a stick and start to play the British versions that were being played in military camps or social clubs or, you know, kind of the sort of enclaves where the British bureaucracy lived. And they started playing the British version and soon became very good at it, but it was the British version that established the actual rules, because in most of those other cultures, there wasn't as much of a tendency to write things down. People were just, you know, playing things in their hometowns or, you know, between villages, etc. And so the British, because they were kind of laying down regulations in all sorts of ways, in all sorts of countries, you know, for trade and for commerce, sports became part of that as well. And so we owe the modern, you know, modern sports as we know them to the British Empire. Perhaps one of the good things to come from the British Empire, one of the few good things.
Well, I have to say that I read the part on cricket and all the rules on cricket, you know, talking about so interestingly written. I read it twice and I still don't understand cricket, Gary. I still don't.
Yeah, well, that's another interesting aspect about the sort of rules when people were writing them down. Basically, most of the rules we have in the book are between the periods of 1740 and 1900. And what's interesting about all of them is they were often writing these rules for people who already knew how to play the game. What they were doing was avoiding fights and telling people, you can't do this thing that you're used to doing or that a lot of people do. You can no longer do that. So they weren't actually thinking that they were explaining the rules to a world. They were thinking that they were agreeing on, you know, principles that everybody was basically familiar with. So very few of the rules that we have in the book actually explain the fundamentals of the game. So what we did, as you know, because you've seen the book, is we went through every set of rules that we included in the book, and we annotated them to try both to explain what was going on at the time and also how those rules in those original versions, you know, were adapted and evolved after those rules were laid down. One of the best examples is basketball, which was invented in the early 1890s by James Naismith at a YMCA in Springfield, Massachusetts. But in the original version of basketball, which you would recognize as the game we play now, much slower, where there were peach baskets instead of nets, but you would say, okay, they're playing some version of basketball, except one of the things you would notice was that you couldn't run with the ball. As soon as you caught the ball, you either had to pass it or you had to shoot it. One of the versions of passing that was allowed was bounce passing. And a couple of years after a basketball was invented, some players at Yale, leave it to the Ivy League, decided that what if we bounce pass the ball to ourselves as a kind of workaround for, you know, to make the game a little bit more interesting. And if you think about it, a bounce pass to yourself, another name for that is a dribble. And so the dribble was invented as an Ivy League cheat, and it was crowdsourced, if you will, and it became very popular very quickly. And so as people started writing down new versions of basketball's rules, even Naismith recognized, oh, that's an improvement. And so we tried to indicate in all of the sports that we included in all of those rules kind of how they evolved and what happened, you know, down the line.
I was very surprised, Gary, as I was reading on the origins of sports, to learn that kickball or kick baseball was invented right here in Cincinnati in 1917.
Yeah, that's one of my, you know, so at some point in our research, we were just sort of hunting around for, you know, early rules of sports, and we came across a magazine called The Playground. The Playground was a magazine for people who ran city playgrounds. And they published about a year after they were invented these rules of kick baseball. And they were invented by a guy named Nicholas Seuss. He's no relation to Dr. Seuss, the author, although obviously he created something that kids, you know, enjoyed very much also. And essentially he was looking for something. He was looking for two things. One, he wanted to teach kids in camp in Cincinnati, in day camp, how to play baseball. But he wanted to do it in a way that was a little bit simpler and easier to master than baseball itself, which required, you know, quite a lot of glove and bat skill. And it's just a lot easier to kick a ball than it is to hit a ball or to catch a ball with a glove. Also, he was trying to invent a game that would appeal to little kids, you know, 5-year-olds, but also 12-year-olds. And kickball serves that purpose. And finally, you wouldn't have to schlep gloves and bats to the playground because they were just as easily lost on the way home or the way there as not. And so he basically cribbed the rules of baseball and used a soccer ball used a basketball originally to invent this new game. And we just loved it because of the inventiveness of this particular fellow and the way it caught on so quickly, because everybody who was running playgrounds everywhere in the United States at the time sort of appreciated the value of this game, and it blew up, if you will. And it's still played, obviously, you know, by lots of kids. You know, the ubiquitous red kickball, which is what everybody thinks about, wasn't invented until the 1950s as we know it, but people were playing that game from the 20s on pretty regularly, and they still play it. It's one of the few sports that you almost get better if you have a couple of beers, which is why adult kickball leagues are very popular as kind of social mixers and networking events, because people can throw back a couple of brews and still play a pretty good game of kickball.
Well, Gary, I love the book. It's got some great history and some fun facts in it, and not only about these 21 sports, but I'm also talking about many other sports on sidelines, looking at the evolution of gloves in baseball or helmets in football, golf balls for golf. A great book. Thank you. And thanks to Neil for putting it together and enlightening us on how these sports all began. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. And thanks for having me on.
Gary Belsky, who along with Neil Fine, has written the book On the Origins of Sports, the early history and original rules of everybody's favorite games. And it just, even with those 21 big sports, it does have rules for other little games like rock, paper, scissors, lizard, Spock, too. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. This is the Book Club at 91.7.